DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by John Mark Miravelli, who is a professor of systematic and moral theology at Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Maryland. He received his doctorate in sacred theology from the Regina Apostolorum in Rome. With John Mark Miravelli, we go inside the pages of Beauty, Why It Is and Why It Matters, from Sophia Institute Press. John Mark, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
This book, Beauty, What It Is and Why It Matters, is so wonderful. It is, if you don't mind me saying, it's a catechesis of beauty.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. I hope everyone get this book and then go out in the world. Okay, but first read this book because it will make you look at everything differently.
Oh, I'm so glad I had that effect.
Tell me what led you to write this.
Well, I work at Mount St. Mary's Seminary, and I had to come up with a new elective. And I've been doing a lot of real controversial stuff. I do debates and a lot of philosophy and logic stuff. And I was riding my bike to work, and I was thinking about doing the problem of evil. And I was riding to work, and we live here in Maryland. It's just a very beautiful area. And I just thought, I can't argue anymore for a while. Mm-hmm. I want to do something that doesn't involve argument. And I just looked around, and I said, I want to know more about beauty. I want to understand how it works, and I want to understand how to integrate it into all aspects of your life. So then I proposed that as an elective, and a bunch of seminarians took it. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. So really, it was just riding my bike to work that did it.
And you kind of, what it sounded like, you almost posed a prayer. Let me do something else. And it sounded as though you were inspired.
Yeah, you know, I read, I think I put this in the book. There's a quote by Jacques Maritain. He says, to God's art, which is nature, it makes a person feel small, but also provokes person to magnanimity. So when you're out in nature, I find this rings very true for me. I feel very small, and I remember that God is very large and that his world is very large. But also paradoxically, I find that I want to do great things and not simply sort of over focus on minutia and particular needs and problems. So that was a wonderful sort of provocation from nature in my life, for sure.
John Mark, you bring out, I think, one of the quintessential sufferings of this present age is that the human person is saturated in the problems, in the stuff of the world. I mean, even in ancient times, but even a couple hundred years ago, you could escape the problems by having to take a walk out in nature just to get to one place to another. Or you had to, you know, engage in your work. You had to be doing something outside of the culture and society to be able to bring it back and contribute. But now, with the present day media and everything else, that's all you hear and see. And that is destructive to the human person, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, Chesterton and Pieper are two of the great names who point out that we live in an age and have lived in an age for now about 100 years, where people vacillate between workaholism and entertainment binging. And they both are brilliant in pointing out that both workaholism and entertainment binging prevent one from being open to reality. And that both are actually a sin against the Sabbath commandment to rest. Because obviously when you're busy working, you're not resting, but also when you're Netflix binging, you're restless. And so to break out of that vacillation, again, between work and entertainment requires rest, and it requires an openness that causes you to delight in the world again and not simply to seek an escape from it. Mm. And that's beauty. That's what beauty is. Beauty is breaking the bonds of work and of servile distraction. And say, no, that's right. This is the way things are, and it's really good.
You I'm sure, encounter the argument all the time that what you think is beautiful, I don't think is beautiful. I mean, beauty is something that's relative. And in actuality, it does have a fundamental character, doesn't it?
Yeah, and one of the wonderful things about the doctrine of the transcendental is this idea that truth and goodness and beauty are all intrinsically equivalent, even though we experience it differently. It helps us explain why everything gets relativized. So once truth gets relativized, then goodness gets relativized, and it should certainly come as no surprise that beauty would be relativized. And the Catholic response, again, the response of someone who believes in objective reality, is to say, no, there is objective truth, and there is objective moral goodness, and there is objective beauty. And the key, I think, is for Catholics to learn better how to articulate the objectivity of those categories. People say, what is it that makes truth objective? What makes morality objective? And what makes beauty objective?
What I find fascinating about this, John Mark, is that you are a professor of systematic and moral theology, and yet you're essentially painting a picture for us or composing music for us. You're providing for us the way to enter into the mystery of beauty, if we can say it that way, and yet you've anchored us because of that background that you have. It usually you get things like this from art historians or those who study liturgical theology, but it's wonderful that it's coming from someone with your background.
Well, thank you. You're very gracious. Again, I don't have a lot of gifts. One of my gifts, you know, / weaknesses is I don't understand things unless they're very, very simple. And, you know, I always say if I can't explain it to a 12-year-old, it's because I don't get it myself. Mm. And so I read a lot of books on beauty, and I found that, and understandably, a lot of people who write about beauty want to sort of be poetic, which is great, which is fine. But poetry uses an awful lot of metaphor and a lot of maybe imprecise speech. So I thought it would be nice if I could write a book that could give really clear A, definitions, and also B, really clear takeaways for daily life. So, again, I'm just so gratified to hear that at least in your case, that was successful.
You hit all of the areas that touch our lives if we're open to it. Not only just the beauty of creation, but the beauty of what is poetry. I think a literary form that has been lost, I think, in this present age in a very real way. It's unfortunate. But then again, maybe we don't have the poets out there to be able to give us that sense of beauty.
Well, for me, you know, the biggest sort of, you know, insight that I was able to find in researching and putting the book together is this idea, right, that beauty is a combination of order and surprise. Mm-hmm. And that was not only helpful for me understanding beauty, but it was really, really helpful for me trying to understand where people go astray and framing people's misguided lives as choosing either order without surprise or surprise without order. So I can give you a quick story. I was exercising one day when I was researching this, and there was some image that came into my head. And I honestly don't remember what the image was, but it was very morbid and twisted. I remember that. And I remember saying to God, Lord, why would you allow this idea to surface in my mind? And more importantly, why would you make me such that I would indulge this idea? Because I did. I indulged it. It was such a bizarre idea that I spent a second sort of indulging it. And I thought, oh, because God's made me for surprise, but he's made me for the surprise of beauty, which is surprise joined to order. And what so much of contemporary life is, and certainly in the arts and poetry and music, it's all surprise apart from order. People are trying to get just this one half of beauty and rip it apart from the natural order to which it belongs. And that gives you just crazy, weird, dark, twisted, perverse stuff. And that's what people get hooked on. And that to me was very helpful to say, oh, you know, these crazy artists, these crazy poets, or, right, guys involved in real deep fetishism, they're not monsters. They're people who were made for beauty, and they've sold themselves short. They're just going for the surprise, for the shock, when they could have surprise connected to goodness.
Well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating when you look at it that way. It just as you were describing your experience when you're working out and that came to you, it always engages our imagination, doesn't it? And somehow the imagination, God uses that in when it is cultivated in that order. And I would say virtue too. You know it when you see it, you experience it, you hear it, you feel it.
Yeah.
But it engages that imagination. The enemy can use that imagination too to cause that break, as you said.
Right. And that's why discipline of the images is so important. Other people have pointed out, we have eyelids almost as God's way of saying, hey, filter what you allow in through your sight. And, you know, I go around and I do lots of talks for different groups, and I point out to them, I think a lot of Catholics don't really want to go to heaven. They figure it's better than the alternative, but they have no desire, because desire comes from our images. Desire is a response to it, and our images of heaven tend to be terrible. We picture heaven as like a cloud with a five-string harp, or a gospel choir singing Alleluia, which gets boring after the first billion years. Or they have that 80s vision of heaven, you know, just people wearing white and white cloud and, you know, white walls. Nobody wants to go to an antiseptic heaven like that. Whereas when you look at the beautiful images our Lord gives, right, a wedding feast, right, a mansion with the mortgage paid off, you know, again, Sabbath rest, the eternal Miller time, those are images that people can get behind, right? New family, get your family back, father, mother, sister, brother, lands, and all else besides an everlasting life, the new heavens, the new earth. So just to your point, cultivating beautiful images fills you with a desire to pursue the good and to pursue all the ultimate good, which is heaven. And I think we get lazy with that. We get lazy in our liturgy. We get lazy in our prayer with cultivating beautiful images. And as a result, we are unmotivated to live Christian Catholic lives.
I think I'm going to say it over and over again. It probably has become one of my all-time favorite books because, as you said, it so simply explains truth. And St. Paul, I believe, refers to that in scriptures, that this is not a complicated thing, folks. Sometimes we make it too complicated, that it's better to see it simply. That's how God reveals himself to us. Not that we're simpletons, but because he wants it communicated clearly to us. And I think that's what happens sometimes with art, with music. Beauty, you just know it. And not every artist, right, John Mark, it claims to do beautiful work.
No. Sadly, a lot of the arts today resent any connotations with the beautiful. In fact, I was just looking at a piece by, I can't remember the name of the sculptor, but one of his famous pieces, which has sold for millions, of course, is titled Ugly Object. And when I have a good friend who kind of lost his faith in art school and has recently converted. And when art becomes simply the expression of the soul, of the self, and when the self in question has lost all orientation, well, that expression is going to be pretty awful. One thing that's a very fascinating movie, called Who the Bleep is Jackson Pollock? That's actually the title. A woman found a painting for $5. This is a true story. It happened about 20 years ago. And it looked like Jackson Pollock. Well, right, and I don't know what you think about Jackson Pollock, but you don't get a lot of order in Jackson Pollock. Well, the fascinating thing was, if it was by Jackson Pollock, the piece was worth on today's art market about $10 million, $20 million. If it was not by Jackson Pollock, it was worth the $5 she paid at the thrift store. So because art has been tied simply to the ego and the self of the artist, it no longer has any value in itself. It's a fascinating thing. No one would ever say, well, you know, this statue, how much is it worth? Well, it depends who made it. But what a terrible depreciation of art to say, oh, yeah, it's just whether the guy who made it is famous. That's all we care about. But that's what happens when art loses its orientation to beauty, is the art itself loses all intrinsic value.
We'll return to Inside the Pages in just a moment. Did you know that you can obtain a free app which contains all your favorite Discerning Hearts programs? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Archbishop George Lucas, Father Mauritius Fildi, and so many more, including episodes from Inside the Pages, can be obtained on the Discerning Hearts free app. This also includes all the novenas and devotionals and prayers, including the Holy Rosary and Stations of the Cross, the Chaplet of St. Michael, and the Seven Sorrows of Our Lady, all available on the Discerning Hearts free app. Visit the iTunes and Google Play app stores to obtain your free Discerning Hearts app today. A teaching of St. Paul from his second letter to the Corinthians. We are not discouraged. Rather, although our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to what is seen, but to what is unseen. For what is seen is transitory, but what is unseen is eternal.
Hello, my name is Deacon Omar Gutierrez, and I want to ask you to support Discerning Hearts in a special way. We, Chris McGregor, the board, and I all know that not everyone listening can help financially. We know we have listeners from all parts of the world, and we have made a commitment since the beginning to make the truths shared through Discerning Hearts totally free. So while you may not be able to contribute financially, what you can do is certainly pray, but also give us positive reviews on whatever platform you use to listen to us. If it's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, however it is that you get these podcasts, or if you're on YouTube and you like our videos, please give us a good rating and write a review. The more good ratings and reviews we get, the higher our profile, and the more listeners will discover us, listeners who may have the means to contribute in the future. Please consider rating us and writing a positive review today.
We now return to Inside the Pages. We're talking with John Mark Miravelli about his book, Beauty, What It Is and Why It Matters. Yeah, isn't that interesting? I mean, as you were speaking, it made me think of God's great creation in the world. I mean, the beauty of the world that he has fashioned for us and where we live. If you have that sense of stewardship or that gift from the, we believe, the artist who has given it to us, it has a beauty and a value to it that is priceless.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any sense of that, the destruction of it, there doesn't seem to be any remorse. And I know that's going to strike some people as strange in saying that, but would you say that's true?
Oh, yeah. If everything is raw material that has not been given form by a former, then everything is ultimately equivalent. And you can do what you want with it, right? If something is simply, again, this is why you have to step back from work and from utility, because utility, a utilitarian mindset, just get the job done, satisfy our needs, that destroys depreciation for beauty. Think of a man who lusts after a woman. A man who is in the grip of lust cannot appreciate female beauty. And a human being or a society that is in the grip of greed cannot appreciate natural beauty. It sees only what it can do with something and not the goodness inherent in it. And that's exactly what happens when we say, oh, yes, the universe is chaotic, right? It comes from chaos. It embodies chaos. So we can treat it chaotically. We can make it formless again. If I'm working in a shed with a power saw and my kid comes and says, well, what is this sawdust for? I could say, oh, well, the sawdust is an unintended byproduct of a different process. So you can do anything you want with the sawdust because it's not for anything. Well, if that's how we see the universe, then we say, yeah, do whatever you want with it because it's not for anything. But if we see it has orderly because it was designed by an intelligence. And if we see it as surprising because it was designed by a free person, then we say, no, this is meant to be communication. Don't destroy it. It's a message. And that has to be the first principle of any Catholic environmentalism, is nature is not just a resource, it's not even just a home. It's a gift to ennoble the soul before it ennobles the body.
Mm. You're sounding Benedictine there, John Mark.
Okay. I'll take it.
Well, I mean, that's that sense of that humility. The Benedictine and the Benedictine rule there is that first you have to really to understand who you are, not the humiliation, of course, but where you stand in God's eyes. You see yourself as God sees you, and you see the other as well in the same light, and how you treat the world and everything around you, and that sense of humility and living as the fundamental character of the life of virtue, along with all the other virtues. If you're living that, there's an appreciation of beauty that flows from that, don't you think?
Yes, very much. So this is good. I haven't said it yet. The main thesis of my book in this project is that we are obliged not just to know the truth and not just to do the good, but to take delight. So if you're not living a Catholic life, if you're well catechized, and you're doing the right thing, you also have to take delight in what is good. And you have to take delight in what God takes delight in. You have to take delight in your kids. You can't just, you know, be dutiful toward them. You have to take delight in yourself. You have to take delight in nature, which God made because he took delight in. And there's lots of preconditions for taking delight. One is, as I said, you have to rest. You have to step back. But another, as you point out, absolutely, truly, is you have to be humble, because nothing kills delight like entitlement. So ironically, when our Lord said, happy those who mourn, he was expressing a perfect paradox, because only when we recognize that we're sinners will we be grateful for how much God has given to us, not only gratuitously, but mercifully. So humility is an absolute prerequisite to being happy. I think it was the Chesterton line that angels, I don't know if it's Chesterton or Sheen, angels are able to fly because they take themselves lightly, right? Joy requires that you have an appreciation of your own smallness. It's the great Christian paradox. Pride kills joy. Self-centeredness kills joy. So if you want beauty, and you have to have beauty, you can't live a full Catholic life without a discipline of delight. But you're going to need to work on humility constantly.
And what's so interesting, when you mentioned that Catholic life, I think the Christian life in general, too, is that the most beautiful of all things for many will seem ugly. The most beautiful in that stance of humility and that steeped in all virtues is when we gaze upon the crucifix. It incorporates all the senses, but when we gaze upon that, what seems ugly to the world actually is the quintessential form of beauty, isn't it?
That's right. Because beauty doesn't just mean superficially pretty. Beauty is deeper, the deeper you have to get to see the order. And the order of Jesus on the cross cuts to the center of the universe, because it's God's order overpowering the disorder of sin and actually forcing sin and suffering and evil to contribute to the order of God's providential plan. So it's the most powerful order there is, because it's order that incorporates disorder into the overall structure. And that's why the best art is the one that shows even how good is drawn out of you. And that's very, very difficult to do, right? It's to find beauty in brutality and to recognize that God is winning even in his greatest apparent losses. That's order. That's as I've just said, and it's a surprise. It's always a surprise ending. What we know, so what I've been doing talks on this book lately, and I say, think of the most disordered situation you know of. Maybe in your life, maybe in friend's life. I mean, something where it's so broken, it's so knotty, you wouldn't know which thread to start pulling on. And know that God is winning there. Because that's what he does. He takes the most awful situations and he wins in the midst of them. But you can't see the win until later. And the great thing about, because beauty involves surprise, a good story is one where you can't guess the ending, right? You say, don't tell me the ending, I want to be surprised. And so if someone says, well, how is God winning in that situation? The proper response is to say, oh, I don't know. I have no idea. I could never guess the ending. The surprise endings are too good. But I've seen him do this story before. And I know how he ends. So the cross's beauty is the model for Christians on how every brutal situation will be, we do not know how, transformed by the God of good stories.
I think that's what we see in the lives of the saints, isn't it? Because even someone, let's just take little Therese that so many people know. They have heard about her and her little way. A lot of them don't realize, though, the ending of her life was suffering.
Yeah.
And hard, and she didn't always understand it. It's that brutal, as you said. Where is God in that? And yet, look at the fruitfulness. The story is unbelievably beautiful.
Right, because it's not disorder for the sake of disorder, which is what modern pessimism and bizarreness is. It's disorder that is then sanctified and transformed into order. And that's what people want. That's glory, right? That's literally, that's salvation. That's mm-hmm. resurrection. And that is absolutely the lives of the saints. That's the martyrs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their wounds are their trophies.
Boy, do I wish we had more time, John Mark, because your book, Beauty, What It Is and Why It Matters, I said it earlier in the conversation, I really think it's a catechesis for entering out into the world to be able to really encounter the Trinity. And I pick the term catechesis very specifically because it's an instruction that helps us get ready ultimately to allow grace to pour in so we can experience mystery. That's what you've captured here, because in reading literature and reading books, or whether it's seeing movies or seeing anything, when done through this lens that you've presented, this structure, this order that you've helped us to attain, we begin to see the action of God so that we can enter into that Trinity. And it's just beautiful. Thank you so very much.
Chris, thank you very, very much.
One last thing before we go. I wanted to talk to you about that person out there that frustrated because they really want more of a 1, 2, 3, this is what beauty looks like. 1, 2, bump, bump, bump. And everything else outside of that is ugly. This dynamic of living in that virtue, sometimes people are going to experience what they see is what's beautiful to one is going to be different to another, but it's okay.
Yeah, right? That's absolutely right. So beauty has to have an order, but it must also have a surprise. But beauty is very interesting because it is both a celebration of limitation and it is a celebration of going beyond limitation. And it must be both, because if it just celebrates limitation, it becomes cliche. It becomes closed in on itself. It becomes conservative in the wrong sense of the word, in the sense of sterile. Whereas if it just celebrates going beyond boundaries, it becomes just weird, and people just break boundaries for the sake of breaking boundaries, and all sorts of chaotic nonsense happens. So, for instance, there's a former teacher of mine. You know, jazz, when it first came out, a lot of Catholics said, whoa, 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 this does not have the type of melodic structure we are used to. This is disorder. This is the devil's music.
Mm-hmm.
That often happened before the council. Well, actually, a lot of people have now come out and shown the really magnificent structures involved in jazz. So you want to not be narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Because beauty, and our God is a God of newness, right? At the book of Revelation ends, "See, I make all things new."
Mm-hmm.
The Pharisees were narrow. They could not deal with the newness that Christ was bringing. So we want to be open and at the same time orderly. That means, so we have to be open to new things and yet at the same time not betray our tradition. That's the great challenge. That's the great challenge that the church continues to walk in orthodoxy, not being falsely traditionalistic and not being falsely progressive, but taking the nature, the human nature that God has given us and doing things that fulfill it in new ways, but not attack it. And that's why beauty takes work. It takes mental work. It takes flexibility. It takes commitment. But the payoff is joy. So it's worth it.
And again, to remember that not all art is beautiful. Not
right.
Movies, film.
No.
You know, that it's not all. Just because somebody is an artist, to use those eyelids, as you said, if you need to.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Because what you let in through your senses tends to direct your soul.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so beautiful about this book. And I've repeated myself a couple times now. You really help us to nurture that sense of ours, to be aware. I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts, John Mark?
You know, I would just close with the final thought of the book, which is that I do in the book talk about the moral importance of cultivating a sense of music, cultivating a culinary sense, actually, a refined palate. The extent that you can, so that you can live charity more effectively. I think looking at the plastic arts, drawing, painting, sculpture is actually very important. But I want to end by saying this book is not supposed to be about how you can become culturally elite. It's supposed to be about how you can discipline yourself to find joy in everything, in your kids' faces, in a messy house, in your office at work, in what you do, to find the order and the surprise in everything. And these other instruments of the fine arts are supposed to be means towards that end. And ultimately, most importantly, to find delight in prayer. Understanding what beauty is, I hope most of all, will help people to do that.
I have to say that beauty, what it is and why it matters, is truly, and I mean this with all sincerity, is one of the most beautiful books I've read. And I love it. And I'm so glad that you did this. I hope we'll be seeing more from you, John Mark Miravalli. I really, really do. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. Oh, you've been unbelievably gracious. It's been a pure delight. Thank you.
With John Mark Miravalli, we've gone inside the pages of Beauty, Why It Is, and Why It Matters. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to sophiainstitute.com, the website for its publisher, Sophia Institute Press, or you can obtain it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this conversation, along with thousands of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can download it from the free Discerning Hearts app. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, and if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.